To Bikini and the Brain. I have been working on my announcer voice. Can you tell?
Yes.
Do you like it?
I like it.
Okay. It seems legit. I think it's more for like a guy though with the announcer voice. So why don't you give us your best announcer voice?
Welcome to the Bikini and the Brain podcast with Ashley Kottwasser and Adam Bonilla. It's a pleasure to have you.
Oh my God. That was freakishly good. Did you like that? If you guys want to hire Adam for any announcing work,
yes.
Then hey, they can contact you through DM.
I'm thirsty for work, bro.
He's thirsty. So I thought today we should discuss some of these unnecessary extremes in fitness, because I think a lot of times when we hear something, it might be very outdated. A piece of information regarding fitness, or something that they heard of, or something that their friend is doing or told them to do in regards to getting in shape, getting lean, getting ready for a show. And some of these are very, very false. Some of them are very counterproductive and make things worse.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to address some of these things today, like to make it easy on you guys, because we don't want you to do all this extra nonsense.
Yes, so with that being said, today's episode is Unnecessary Extremes in Fitness.
The first one that we really want to discuss is, have you ever heard the saying, you can't have carbs past 7?
Yes.
Have you heard that?
I've heard it.
I still hear it to this day. And it's pretty outdated information, and it's not true. It's not that serious.
Yeah, and that's actually a really good topic to go into, because one, people are saying that have no idea of what time you even go to sleep or you wake up. So, like, what if you woke up and you worked out, you know, at 3 a.m. and had a weird shift or something at work? Well, then it wouldn't apply even to that person, right?
Yeah.
So first off, I think one of the most important things to talk about is, one, carbs don't have a bedtime.
Okay? Oh, really?
You can't put them to sleep and read them a book.
I don't know. I tuck in my loaf of bread every night.
Tuck in a loaf of bread.
I tuck in my loaf of bread. It's my cuddle buddy, yeah.
It's your wonder. I can see it being colorful, so it had to be wonder bread for you.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of things, and this is when I have clients too, I'll tell them kind of pick how many meals you want to eat a day. So there's really cool stuff coming out in fitness right now. We're at I think we're always going to be at the coolest part of fitness, because it's always evolving.
We're the cool kids,
yeah.
You know?
Technology's so there now, and research is everywhere, and I think it's really cool where we're at and the stage that we're at this point. But so recently there was a study done where they tested meal frequency and results associated with meal frequency, which is really cool. So the first one they did 3, 6, and 14 meals in the study. 3, 6, and 14 meals a day. Everyone was in the same caloric deficit, 3 different groups of people. And you'd be surprised at who lost the most amount of weight. Like you're hearing, you think 14 meals a day is going to be the person who loses like the most amount of body fat, right?
That's like a full-time job.
That's crazy. Yeah, it's every 2 hours for 14 hours, so 7 meals. So they tested that, same caloric deficits for everyone. And it was the people who ate 3 meals a day who actually lost the most. But it was very, very nominal. It was very between the 3, it was very, very minimal. Shouldn't even really mention that 3 lost most, because it's misleading, but it's just a tiny bit. And then, so they're like, okay, well, if that worked, let's go ahead and try it one more extreme. So they went 2, 4, and 6 meals a day. And again, the people who ate 2 meals got very, very slightly better results than the people who ate 6. So that just tells you that meal frequency isn't as crazy as people used to think it was.
Yeah. I mean, geez, I remember when I was first getting into bikini competitions, it was more, I guess, common, the meal frequency or timing your meals. And gosh, there was some people that really took that so seriously, like setting alarms on their phone, like, oh my gosh, it's 12, I gotta eat, and just stop whatever they're doing to eat their food, because in 3 hours they gotta eat again, because apparently it was supposed to increase your metabolism the more frequently you eat. And it is so false, as we know now. But I think it's like very deceiving, because a lot of people still kind of preach that method.
Yeah, and you know where that comes from? It was called it's really funny, because I used to think it too when I was a trainer that was just starting.
And he said, I just wanted to interrupt you. He used to wake up in the middle of the night to eat. So if you're still doing this, don't feel bad, because even the smart guy fell for it at one point.
Yeah, you know, I think all the way until I was about 21. So I was doing it for like 3 years, where I'd wake up like in the middle of the night and eat a meal. So I didn't want to miss my anabolic window or go catabolic for too long. So it was like all these extremes, and people are still doing it. And it just doesn't really make any sense. Sleep is definitely better for you than eating a meal, you know? So what she's talking about is this thing called the thermic effect of food. So thermic effect of food is essentially like how many calories your body burns while it's digesting food. And but trainers got that mixed up. And what it really breaks down to make it really simple is that we all thought that the more you ate, the higher the thermic effect of food was, and then the faster your metabolism would be because you're eating more frequently. The truth of the matter is the thermic effect of food is just how many calories it takes to digest that particular food. So obviously if you drink orange juice, the thermic effect is very, very low. But if you eat something like broccoli where it's really they have a higher thermic effect. So let's say your thermic effect of food is 10% of the calories that you consume it takes to digest the food. So if you ate 100 calories, you'd only use 90 of those calories. And the other 10 of those calories would be to you to digest the food you actually ate. So trainers used to think, well, if you just ate more, then you'd have a higher thermic effect of food and a higher metabolism, but not the case. You're always going to be losing about 10% of those calories. Whether it's one meal a day or 20 meals a day, you're still going to have the same thing. So it doesn't correlate to a faster metabolism. It just correlates to digestion of food. So anyway, so that's why that doesn't make sense. And I think that's cool to kind of go, because that was kind of an aha moment for me at one point. So hopefully that has an aha moment for some people out there.
Right. Because it's very convenient to, you know, time your meals or make sure you're getting them all in. And I will say another thing that's not like proven or anything, but it's just something I noticed from me personally and some of my competitors as well. Like when you get on that habit of like, okay, six meals a day, and then you go into like an off season or maybe like a little vacation or even transitioning into, I guess, normal life where you're not a competitor anymore, you still have that ingrained in your mind like, oh, I still gotta eat. Even though I'm not hungry, I still gotta eat. Which I think is a horrible habit. Like, you should not eat if you're not hungry. Don't force yourself to eat just because your mind is telling you, oh, wait, it's three, gotta eat, you know? I think that's important, and especially for those that are no longer, like, competing anymore.
Yeah, this stuff's gotta be fun, you know? It can't be too much of a task. I mean, there's already, it's gonna suck no matter what. Like, at a certain point, it's gonna be hard to stick to your diet. Why do we make it so much harder than it has to be, you know? So so based on raw science and research, it doesn't matter how many times you eat a day. It doesn't, even post-workouts, nutrition hasn't been proven more effective than like not eating, you know, just eating a regular meal. You know, all the studies that have been done that I've seen at least have been done with like endurance athletes and it doesn't really apply as much to, you know, bodybuilding type athletes. So really it just eat when you're hungry, eat when it's convenient. I get asked a lot of questions by like nurses or people who have these like jobs that are like that, or maybe even like if a firefighter has like a 12-hour shift, but he's like really busy that shift and he can't eat, you know, no reason to freak out. You know, eat three times that day, eat two times that day. It doesn't matter. Yeah. It's not going to change your result. It's the same thing's going to happen. So
that's true.
Yeah.
And even coming from a personal standpoint, I think I get asked how many meals do I eat a day? And some of them I wouldn't necessarily consider meals because it's more of like a snack. Like if I'm doing like 200 calories of walnuts or something like that, that's like a snack. That's not like a meal. But I do kind of enjoy having like five a day because when I'm getting closer to a show, I like to entertain my taste buds, if that makes sense. But I'm not on some crazy strict like alarm or schedule. And you know what? If I skip a meal, that's okay. And if I'm more hungry the next meal, it'll be just like a double like what I was supposed to have. So I kind of portion it out like that. At the end of the day, it all equals out whether I do three meals of like doubles or six meals of little. You know, it all depends because when we get close to a show, we tend to get a little more cravings. We tend to get a little hungrier. So it's nice to kind of be like, oh, I have something to look forward to, I guess. Yeah. So it's like a habit for me. But at the same time, I would never eat if I'm not hungry. I'll just kind of save the calories for when I am.
Yeah, and I think that's important for people to realize that it's not going to make you lose muscle. So like on my meal plans, some people want six meals a day, and if they're like on vacation, I tell them, okay, then eat three meals a day, double those meals up, and then if you want to have, which could go into our next thing, which is like cheat meal.
Meals, that's a good subject. Some people are all for it. Some people are very against it. Some people say it has like a boost of metabolism. Some people say it just prohibits your progress. So please tell me, what is your take on the cheat meal?
Yeah, so that's a hot topic.
Just
on its own.
Hot topic alert. Yeah.
Hot topic alert. We need graphics. With our low
we
budget,
need a fire
with
alarm.
Our, with our low budget podcast.
Yes. Until then, we have to make sound effects with our mouth. Like,
yes.
Meow, meow.
So here's the thing about cheat meals is you have some people doing cheat meals, but I would say they're doing them the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And then you have people doing them in the right way. So when you're doing this extreme fitness stuff, which is what, you know, we're doing, yes, is extreme, you know, trying to get very, very lean and very muscular, you know, everything matters. And data collection is a big part of that. So mm-hmm. When you have someone sticking to their meal plan, let's say 5 or 6 days a week, and then having a full cheat meal with no like data collection whatsoever, it makes it really hard to say, okay, this is what happened. Because what we want to do is we want to get a result at the end of the week. So mm-hmm. when you have cardio plus resistance training plus supplements, you know, and we have all that information with your calories, then we know exactly what is it that we need to change this week to make the, to get the result that we mm-hmm. want to get, because we have a target for that week. Whatever it's like, let's say we want to lose a pound and a half, mm-hmm. and we have all that information. But then if you throw in all these things that you can't throw into the data, like, you know, a cheat meal, you're like, oh, I had all this perfectly, but I had a cheat meal, I have no idea how many calories
it was. That's a good point. And even if you're eating out somewhere, you don't know how they cook the food. Did they drench it in oil? Did they add sugar to it? Yeah. You just don't know, because there's no way. You weren't there with the cook, so yeah, you don't know.
And that's what prep is. It's, you know, it's a hypothesis of mm-hmm. what's going to happen this week to get that result, and you need data. So the way that I do cheat meals for my athletes and whatnot is we do calculated cheat meals. So if you're going to have a cheat meal, it's still an exact amount of calories. Mm-hmm. So let's say it's like 1,200 calorie cheat meal,
yes,
once a week, and that can be used a little bit to like spike metabolism. But more than anything, it's a little spike. It's not like going to be a game changer whether you do it or not. But it's mainly like a mental break. And I think that's where the benefit is.
I think that's very important. And I think it also prohibits people from getting those crazy, intense cravings to the point where they give in.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, we're all going to mess up at some point, a little bit at least, on our diet. But I think a cheat meal once a week when you're far out from a show is perfectly okay, because it's like, you know, gives your mind a little break. Okay, I don't have to worry so much, or I can enjoy this meal with my friends and family and not have to, you know, be so concerned about, oh, I got to bring my stuff, which is another thing we're going to cover as well, bringing your own Tupperware to the restaurants and stuff. I'm in agreement with you. I think sometimes as well, people will take it a little far and turn like a cheat meal into a cheat day, because in a span of like, 2 hours, you can do some serious damage.
Serious,
like, if somebody tells you, have whatever you want for this cheat meal, and you just go ham and have a whole pizza and some ice cream, just think about how much you have to do to counteract all those calories you had. It's like, whoa, is it worth it to you? I mean, gosh, what is a whole pizza?
It's, you know? Yeah, if it's like 300 calories a slice and like, what is it, 8 or 10 slices of a pizza, that's like 3,000 calories, you know?
You know, that's like a marathon.
That's like two meals, two and a half days for some of these competitors.
That's how I like to think of it. I like to think of like, well, if I have this and it's like in abundance and if I go crazy, do I really want to do that? Because that's a lot of work I have to do to counteract it. And it's like taking one step forward and two steps back.
Yeah, and then when you look at that, when people are doing cheat meals like that, it's a lot of times it's the same coaches that are having people do really, really low calories. So they'll be, let's say, like eating 800 calories, 900 calories a day, which is something that I would never do.
Mm-hmm.
And then they give them like a cheat meal, just, okay, just go have whatever you want. Well, that person eats 3,000 calories. Well, I'd rather just give that person 1,500 calories and divide those calories by 7 days and not give them a cheat meal and just have them feeling better throughout the whole prep versus dying for 6 days
mm-hmm.
and then feeling good for one.
That's, you know, probably that's also a cause of like eating disorders too, is when that happens, is because people are used to then binging and stuff like that. So I think it creates really bad habits when that is involved. So if you're doing that, don't do it.
it's
better to be consistent.
Yeah, and you know, you could talk to maybe your coach about adding more calories into your other days and not having a cheat meal, or having calculated cheat meals at like 500 calories twice a week if you're really mm-hmm. struggling, or something like that. And with those, when I do have people doing those cheat meals, I have them eat whatever they want. Like, it's like literally eat whatever you want, but it has to be between 1,100 and 1,200 calories.
Yeah, which is reasonable.
Yeah,
that's like, very reasonable.
That's a full, like, you know, that's an ice cream and a piece of pizza, you know?
Right.
Like, that's not bad, you know?
I once knew someone that their coach allowed them, like, okay, in the span of 3 hours, you can have literally whatever you want. And they bought donuts, they bought pizza, anything they could eat in that span of time, because that was his theory.
That's...
I'm like, whoa.
You could offset the whole week.
I think that their reasoning behind it was some of those calories won't absorb all at once or something. I don't know. But it was crazy to me. I'm like, I would never do that. That doesn't even sound appealing to me. I don't want to feel sick. I hate that feeling of being like bloated and like, oh, my food is not digesting. It's just sitting there. It's like, I hate that. Yeah. I would never do that.
When you're splitting hairs at this high level, like, you need to know how many calories your people are eating. You know? That's the thing. You just need the data. You need to know cardio calories. At minimum, just cardio and calories, you know. But every, you know, I like knowing the workouts too and the total volume of exercises. And so, yeah, I don't know. That's just not my thing. So that's something to take into account. If you've never been able to, like, really nail your conditioning and never get lean enough, maybe that's something you want to look at a little more thoroughly. Like, are you able to even collect the right data, you know, for you to assess what the next plan of attack would be, you know. So anyway, so we'll move on past that.
And actually, I think it's important to touch on a similar kind of topic. So let's say I'm out with my friends and there are actually healthy options, but I'm prepping. I mean, me, I'm a believer in, like, if you're able to eyeball it and you're eating chicken and some salad and you kind of know what chicken and salad has in it and you ask not to cook in oil, I think it's okay to, like, you know, have a meal at a restaurant. It doesn't necessarily always have to be cooked by you, so you know exactly.
Totally, yeah.
I think there is a little bit of leniency in that. I mean, we went out to eat before at, like, what, Cheesecake Factory?
Yeah, and then
a few weeks before a show, because then, we knew.
Texas Roadhouse, too, yeah.
Yeah, because it's like we know basically what's in it. I mean, it's a good guess anyway. If you get grilled chicken or steak or lettuce, even broccoli, ask for it steamed, no oil. And I think it's a pretty safe bet sometimes. But I don't know. People always bring their containers of food with them to the restaurants and stuff. And I'm just like, whoa, that's a little much. I mean, I don't think that's necessary, to be honest. I mean,
I don't either. You know, that's the thing is, like, sometimes you have people, and a lot of times the people who do that are the zero or 100s, you know? So you have people who are basically 0% in the off season and 100% in the in season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're so extreme that everyone around them hates when they prep.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of, like, something that we do need to take into account is, like, I can't even tell you how many relationships I've seen ended because of prep, you know? And so it's something that, like, you know, it's not just you that's in prep. It's the people that are close to you that's in prep. And if you're going to go out and have a meal with them once a week, and that meal's pretty close to what it should be, maybe you're off by 50 calories, it's not going to derail the whole week. You know, it's not going to throw off my data, at least, if it's like 50 calories. Because the marker of error, just so you guys know, even on food, is about 10%. That's like the studied marker of error, even when you're weighing and measuring food, which is crazy. So your calories are always going to be a little bit off every day, even though you think you're perfectly on. You're like, no, I'm perfectly on. It's just a little different.
And if you think about it, even if you are cooking your own food, are you drying out your chicken? Like, are you cooking it too much to where the moisture is leaving, so it's going to be more calorie dense? Is the rice you're cooking more the water ratio of
less
rice?
Or more,
It's really, unless you do the scientific lab test where you burn the food to find the actual calorie property of it, which is how they do it, right? They burn it in a lab to see how long it burns for, and that's like the caloric energy or something.
Yeah, it's like they measure the flame and all this. Yeah. It's some crazy
stuff.
So your margin of error is already about 10%. When you go to a restaurant and you're asking, like, we went to Texas Roadhouse, well, all their meat portions, for the small meat portions, it says right on the menu it's 4 ounces. Mm-hmm. They're actually back there weighing it. Maybe it's 4 1/4 and they throw it on. Big deal, you know?
Yeah, that's like what?
10, 15 calories.
100-meter walk or something?
So it's not going to matter. It's bigger than your margin of... It's smaller than your margin of error already is. So enjoy it, you know? Have steamed broccoli. If it looks like it might be a cup and a half and your coach says cup, eat the cup and a half. It's not... It's so minor in calories that it's not going to be... You don't need to weigh it, you know?
Yeah, you don't need to obsess so much over it. That's going to make the entire experience miserable at one point. At first, you might be into it, like, hardcore. Yeah, love it. Yeah, the diet life. Yeah. But then after a while, you're going to get sick of it. And I think that's, like, why a lot of girls drop off, you know? You see them, they turn pro, their future looks promising, and then they just get miserable. They're like, oh, I can't do this more. Or either that, or they just go crazy in the off season because they're so strict. And then when they can have a little bit of freedom, it's like, what? eating everything, doing whatever. So I think it's best just to be, you know, a little lenient and not so obsessive over this stuff.
Yeah, it has to stay fun. You know, you need to have some. It's never going to be 100% balanced. Like, that's never going to be a thing that exists with prep. But having better, a little bit better balance and having realistic for your husband, your girlfriends, whatever, I think that's important too. So like to manage that family life, that right. your friend life,
the or their balance. Like, if you guys yeah. want to check out our first podcast, our second podcast, we kind of talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Like balance and what should you expect? I mean, at one part of me says, you know, at the pro level as a pro athlete, of course it's not easy. Of course I have to make sacrifices. But doesn't every other professional athlete have to make sacrifices? NBA on the road, like every week, you know, for what? I don't know. 8 months out of the year? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know the season. But I'm giving you an example. Michael Phelps, 4 hours of training or whatever. In the grand scheme of things, it's not any different than any other pro sport. And I would say at some point, maybe even a little easier, because we do have some control at some point
yeah.
of how or how often we want to practice or what shows we want to do and what shows we don't want to do. Rather, you know, NBA, they can't be like, I don't want to do this again. Yeah. I don't want to train today either. I'll just, you know, that's not how it is. So, I mean, be grateful.
Yeah, for sure. So let's go ahead. We'll move on to the next one. And I think a lot of it goes into like the extremes of this. So we already mm-hmm. covered kind of, you know, eating every 2 hours, and let's go into, you know, like what you already kind of dove into the topic of why girls kind of get burnt out and they mm-hmm. leave. And I think one of the major issues is the time commitment in the gym, which we're kind of going into now.
Yes.
And also, you know, and is it, why are we spending so much time in the gym? Like, what's the reason that girls are spending, like, during a prep, mm-hmm. 3.5 hours in the gym a day? That's
right.
That's crazy, you know?
Like, yeah.
So, especially because we're not, you know, Michael Phelps getting paid Michael Phelps Subway money. You know what I mean? It's like,
yes.
it's not your only job. Like, most people who are getting in the sport who are just starting, at least, everyone who's just starting, at least, is they have a, you know, regular job, and then they do this. So when you have a regular job that's 8 hours plus your commute to work, it's like 9 hours total, and then you do 3 hours of the gym plus working out before and then a shower after and then getting ready for work, you're talking about, you know, it adds up to like 15, 14 hours of your day is just gone. So mm-hmm. Of course you don't want to prep anymore, you know. So, and I think a lot of that comes down to some of the topics that we're going to go over today, which are myths, you know, like mm-hmm. fasted cardio,
yeah.
you know. So we can go into that one first.
Sure. You know? I'll give my intake on it. So fasted cardio, in case you guys don't know, is basically doing cardio on an empty stomach. Now, do I do fasted cardio? Most of the time, yeah. But not for the reason you guys think. I'm not burning any more calories necessarily. It's just I'm not hungry yet. Okay?
Yeah.
And like I mentioned previously, I'm not hungry. I'm not going to eat. Some people I would actually suggest to eat, because some people tend to get a little lightheaded when they work out or train on an empty stomach, and I totally understand that, but I don't. And in yeah. fact, I prefer just to like get out the door, because I am such an early riser,
yeah.
such an early riser, that if I'm doing like cardio at like 4:30, I don't have my appetite yet, but I'll work it up later in the day. So that's why I do it. But if I do happen to wake up on a day where I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm hungry, then of course I'm gonna eat before I do cardio. It doesn't matter either way.
Yeah.
And as you're about to tell everyone, fasted cardio, sorry guys, it's not going to do much more for you.
Yeah, and there's been two relative studies to this at this point that I've seen. There might be more. I haven't looked into it in the last maybe year, but there's been two that are relevant. And basically it was fasted versus fed cardio, and neither showed superior. So what this is the issue, and I think a lot of like old school trainers just don't really think things through. And ask the whys. They just say, oh, my coach did this to me, so I'm going to do this to you because mm-hmm. it works. Well, yeah, it worked. Everything worked because you were eating less than you burned. So, yeah, it worked. Yeah, you know, everything's going to work when you do it that way. That's just how it goes. So what they were thinking was, when you wake up in the morning, you know, you're depleted of your glucose and you're depleted of glycogen, and you're going to tap into fat stores at a higher rate. And unfortunately, that doesn't work that way. And you got to think about things logically. Like, are you really depleted in the morning just because you slept? So when you sleep, you're at your lowest calorie burning throughout any point of the day. And the human body isn't designed to just wake up and eat. You got to remember, we lived in caves and we lived in huts, you know, back in the day. And we didn't eat for 3 days.
That's
or during
a really
winter
good
periods.
Point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the body is not going to just be, we're not evolved to the point of like where our society is now, where we can just get food in the refrigerator and get food every single day and our body can count on it.
Mm-hmm.
The body doesn't think that way. It thinks, oh, well, we need to be prepared just in case a winter storm breaks out and we can't get outside to eat food or catch food or mm-hmm. pick food for, you know, maybe 4 or 5 days. Like, so it has to be able to survive. So because of that, your glucose stores, your glycogen stores are not going to be gone the next morning. It doesn't work that way. It would take you, it would take you so much work to deplete all of your glucose stores. You'd have to run a marathon. And if you ran the marathon, you'd still have some glucose in you. Yeah. And so like, it's just not, you sleeping is not doing anything in terms of depleting glucose stores mm-hmm. for your morning to be using at a higher fat rate. So that's one thing that you can, if you're doing it right now and it's inconvenient because you have to wake up before, the main thing is you have to wake up before you go to work, be fasted, and then you go home and eat. So that takes a lot of your day out and mm-hmm. there's nothing to back that works. So I would say do cardio whenever it's convenient. I try to have all my athletes do their workouts and cardio mm-hmm. in the same session.
Right.
You know, Ashley wakes up really, really early.
Yeah, so I'm a morning person for like, sure. So I'm like actually on the days I do cardio, I like to get it done and out of the way because I like to get that little sweat. Then I take a shower, have my little routine.
Yeah.
Then I get ready for the day and I'll do some lifts in the afternoon. But I just like to get it over with personally.
She wakes up like at 4 a.m. sometimes and does cardio. So, but the other thing too is like Ashley's evolved to that point where this is her job
I'm
now.
Evolved.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's your job now, so you have the luxury of it's not a big deal if you do two a day, you know. But for someone who's like a nurse, 12 hours, and they're still required to do fasted morning and then a workout after work and then cardio, that's a nightmare for them, mm-hmm. you know. So, so that's one of the things that you don't necessarily need to do. And some of them are like, with how you're doing your cardio too, there's a lot of options with cardio these days, especially with people having iPhones and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So some of my people who have like, let's say they're doing, they are nurses 3 days a week, they're doing 12 hours. Well, maybe they don't need to do cardio that day. So we just count steps for them, count steps because they're on their feet the whole time.
Smart.
Yeah. So some people have like do like 80,000 steps a week mm-hmm. and however they get it in, they get it in, or they could do 30 minutes of steady state mm-hmm. or 30 minutes of HIIT cardio or whatever,
right.
you know? So there's a lot of ways of managing prep these days where it doesn't need to suck. And I think that's the important thing is that me and Ashley both want to get across more than I think anything is that anyone can be in this type of shape. It isn't just limited to the people who have 3 hours a day and can only eat chicken and broccoli for, you know, mm-hmm. 6 months at a time. I think that's the important thing that we're trying to get across in this today. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it is important because I think it's almost like people brag about this stuff, about how extreme they are.
Yeah.
It's like something cool to them, like, yeah, I just ate chicken and broccoli for the past 3 months straight. That's the only thing. You know, they'll brag about it maybe on social media to show that they're tough and that they're dedicated and focused. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's important to train smarter rather than harder, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You don't need to waste your time. You don't need to put yourself through all these unnecessary tactics. And at the end of the day, you might find that your smarter approach works way better than the hard stuff.
And I've had that happen with quite a few athletes that have always worked hard. And then we just like went to see if it did it a different way and it worked,
mm-hmm.
you know? If you guys are familiar with anyone, you can see it on my Instagram too. It's like with Frida, she's a perfect example. She was doing like 3 hours of cardio for the Arnold, and now she's down to 30 minutes 3 times a week, and just it's working for her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't say it's going to work for everyone, but we tried it and it works. You know, she's at 1700 calories, losing 1.5 pounds every week.
That's incredible.
And before she was eating way less. And so she's like, this is not even like, I can prep like this all year.
Yeah.
Like it's not a problem. But she wouldn't know that unless she tried a different way, you
mm-hmm.
know? And she's got great results in doing it the other way, too. So it's like, they both work for her, but this way is obviously, for longevity reasons, is great. So if you've never even tried it, give yourself the chance. See if your body will respond to these things, because maybe you are one of those people that can do it like that. So
don't be shy.
All right, so let's go into... So we've covered basically too much cardio. So what is too much cardio, though, right?
Yeah, man. That's another thing people brag about. Oh, yeah, I did 2 hours of cardio today. You know, it's a lot of unnecessary cardio, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think a great gauge of... I wish people would wear those heart rate monitors more.
Yeah.
Because you'll find that maybe the amount of calories you burnt going slower in, like, an hour is less than a HIIT session in, like, 20 minutes.
Right.
You know, if you notice, like if you're running a long, slow distance, maybe you're not that much out of breath and it's kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm just here just to knock that out. But if you're doing HIIT, you should be like out of breath to the point you can't talk on the phone.
Yeah.
You can't be text messaging and you're like exhausted after you have to like catch your breath. That's a good HIIT session.
Yeah. And I call it like train like an athlete, you know, and that's so what she's talking about is called the rate of perceived exertion, which is essentially like, can you, if you can't carry a conversation, that's a perceived exertion, like you're doing it hard as you need to be doing it. The thing with, kind of the old school approach and these old school coaches will do a lot of steady state cardio because they took one piece of information and really got confused by it. I wouldn't say they want to use it the wrong way. They just got confused by that piece of information. And so what happened was there was another study I'm referencing where they tested, you know, how many calories people burn from fat while doing steady state cardio versus doing, you know, harder, basically anaerobic type, you know, cardio, like so harder cardio, like HIIT cardio, whatever. So they found that in the steady state cardio group, you burned more calories from fat. Mm-hmm. But so the coaches, they saw this like, okay, well, if we're burning more calories from fat, then we'll do 2 hours of cardio and burn all of our calories from fat. Mm-hmm. And then we'll do it fasted because there's going to be no glucose available. And then we'll burn all this fat, right? Well, yeah, in theory, that makes sense. But you took one extract out of that study and you didn't take into consideration like real world application. So whenever you move less, you burn more calories from fat. So your highest amount of calories that you'll burn from fat is when you're sleeping, actually. So your percentage of calories burned while you're sleeping is the highest while you're sleeping. So the less you move, the higher the percentage of calories burned from fat. And that's because the body can't keep up with, you know, oxidizing fat and using it as energy, especially when you're doing something as fast as like HIIT cardio. So that's not the reason we're doing cardio in the first place. And people don't get that. You know, you're not doing cardio to burn fat. When you do steady state cardio, it's the exact equivalent as eating less because it doesn't have any effect on the metabolism. Mm-hmm. It has zero metabolic effect. What you're trying to do with cardio is you're trying to preserve lean mass and you're trying to increase metabolism because burning calories from fat, it's simple. We'll just eat less calories. That'd be the same effect. But HIIT cardio, it does this thing where it actually increases your metabolism because the recovery process is so hard with HIIT cardio that it actually increases the metabolism. So
that makes sense.
It gets really, really technical, but basically how much oxygen you consume after a hard workout increases metabolism for a period of time. Mm-hmm. So about a 24-hour period, you get a faster moving metabolism after HIIT cardio. But if you did 2 hours of steady state cardio, you would not have a faster metabolism whatsoever. You would only burn the calories you burn during that period, mm-hmm. which is the same as eating less.
Yes.
And then you also lose more muscle by doing endurance-based activities for too long of a period. So it turns into this whole mess of you not being your best because you're losing muscle, you're not increasing your metabolism, now you're eating less calories because your metabolism's slowing, you're not doing anything to maintain the metabolism or get the metabolism to be higher. And that's when you run into these really long cardio session preps, really low calorie preps, and you can avoid that, you know. So anyway, that's one I'm like super, I could probably be an hour on just that alone, so yes. I'll leave it there. But I would say people have a maximum of 45 minutes of cardio a day. And that is only like the last like 3 weeks maybe, you know. Other than that, we try to keep it below that if possible, you know. Unless you're like a weird scenario, like Ashley's a good example of that. Like her legs got a little bit
who, me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your legs, this one. Yeah. When you say Ashley, it's like, wait, I'm right next to you. So it's like, oh, you say you. So you're a great example.
She's a great example because like her legs did get a little bigger. So when she was building, and so it made sense to do more endurance cardio because it made her legs smaller. So that was to lose muscle purposely. So there's reasons for it, but it's not too often.
Yes, I agree. And I think along the lines of these extreme things people do, there's one that I hear a lot, and it's like, it kind of strikes the nerve because it's so like, no, is the fact like cutting salt. I still hear that all the time. Oh, I shouldn't eat this because it has salt in it. It has sodium. And like, it's good. Yeah. It's okay. Unless you have a health condition that purposely they tell you don't consume any unnecessary sodium or anything like that. So that's the disclaimer, guys.
Yeah.
If you have any health condition, then this information doesn't apply to you. But salt is pretty important.
Yeah.
And I'm going to explain it in the simple terms. And you correct me if I'm wrong on this one. So the reason why sodium is important is, well, electrolyte balance and making sure everything doesn't get crampy or anything like that. Everything runs smoothly in the body. And also, sodium pumps water into the muscle. Because am I correct?
To some degree, yes.
To some degree? Okay. The way I guess, figured it out as, like, it holds onto water, which is why people think, oh, I'll retain water when I get sodium. But that's okay because you can get rid of sodium retention in days. That's not fat. Don't fear it like it's going to cause you to actually gain weight that you can't get rid of. And by consuming sodium, it's going to allow not only the water to be in your body, but also pump into your muscles so you get a good pump and then kind of breaks down the muscle so it can rebuild and then you grow stronger. So please correct me if I'm wrong on any part of that.
You're right on a lot of that. You're right on a lot of that. Yeah, so I think it's important to kind of, we'll go into it just very minorly in the technicality of it because it is really complicated. And even some doctors actually, this is this is crazy, but some doctors are actually wrong in telling people that they shouldn't eat sodium, even if they have a condition. Yeah, it depends on the condition, but it's pretty rare where someone shouldn't have it. So so everyone thinks, oh, sodium equals water retention. And we've kind of just been taught that throughout our years.
Yeah.
And so it comes down to this hormone called aldosterone, which is basically the hormone that regulates how much water retention that you have in your body. So the more it's triggered, the more water retention you have. Mm-hmm. But there's also this thing, and I don't want to get too crazy, but there's also this thing in your body where you have, where it's homeostasis, which is essentially you're balanced. So whenever you're homeostatic, it means that your body's balanced. So your balance setting is different than her balance setting is different than my balance setting. There's no set amount of sodium that everyone should have. So the set amount that you should have is what your body has gotten used to over years of eating the amount of sodium that you have. So let's say, for example, I eat 3,000 milligrams of sodium a day. I don't even know how much I eat. But let's say it's 3,000. Well, if one day I go out and I eat a pizza and I eat 6,000, well, yes, my hormonal aldosterone will fire off and it'll make me hold more water because I had double the amount of sodium I'm used to. But if every day of my life I had 6,000 milligrams of sodium anyways, well, then my body would have a normalized amount of aldosterone and I wouldn't hold any water. So it doesn't matter how much sodium you have. As long as you have the same amount that you normally do, you will not have more water. And as Ashley said, you having sodium in your system it's a major electrolyte. If you've ever been backstage or even just at the gym and you can't get a pump, it's probably sodium. You probably cut your sodium too much, and there's absolutely no reason for it. It's actually dangerous for you to cut your sodium. Mm-hmm. It helps with you're not gonna be able to get a good pump. It helps with your electrolyte balance. It actually helps with how much the contraction rate of your muscles when you're lifting. So it is super, super important. So don't overdo it. Just eat the amount that you normally ate, even in prep. Keep salting your foods. Don't ever change that, because if anything, you're going to make yourself worse. You're definitely not going to make yourself better.
Yes. If you do happen to, I don't know, have a cheat meal after the show or something, and the next day you're very puffy, don't freak out. It's water retention. Water retention you can get rid of within a few days. People act as if when they retain water, they can't get rid of it or something like that. Like it's permanent. And it's not. It's so easy to get rid of.
So as far as as far as that topic goes, I mean, that's pretty much just look into it a little farther. Always look into it. Always ask the whys, because it could get pretty dangerous when people are cutting sodium and they start cutting water too. And that's a whole other topic. And
cutting water? Yes, even when I'm close to a show, even the day before the show, I don't cut water at all. The only time I will cut water, I guess, is like the day of. I'm not going to have like a gallon before I go on stage, only for the fact that I need to keep my waist small. But it doesn't really matter as long as you can get rid of it. I mean, I pee and then it's gone. People cut water and it's so unnecessary, miserable, and sometimes dangerous too.
Very dangerous. Yeah, that's one of the ones. If anyone takes anything from this, it would be the water one and then the sodium one next. Like, to just don't do those two things.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to help you in any way.
They try to do all these crazy tricks and stuff before they get on stage. Like, oh, I'm going to restrict all my water, no sodium. And then, like, right before I go on stage, I'm going to have a huge hamburger with french fries. And I'm like, what? It's crazy. Playing with fire. All these crazy tactics. You don't need to do it.
Absolutely not. Yeah, so you got to remember, like, muscle is mostly water. Like, it's your whole body is mostly water. Like, you're like, I think it was like 70% water. And so, you know, actually, that's really funny. Is there's like this kid, he was on my hockey team, and the coach was like, show me what you're made of. And he goes, 70% water?
that was a good one.
I was cracking up. I still remember that because it was like so funny.
Dude, that's a good joke. I love it.
So that you are made of water. You have a ton of water in your body. And, you know, if you cut that, then all you're going to do is you're going to shrink the size of your muscle. So there's some of these things we can go so far into technically that people would lose people.
Yeah, we don't want to lose you guys.
But there is a very small amount of fluid that's in between cells, and that's what people try to get rid of. Out of all the water in your body, that's less than 7% of the water. So anything that would be like below the skin water, it's such a small amount that you would pay 93% to get rid of 7. So you make your muscles look smaller.
That's
look
when people
flatter.
Look flat. Yeah. When somebody says, oh yeah, they looked so flat. And it just pretty much is probably from the fact that they depleted their water.
Depleted water or took like, you know, too much diuretics or whatever, you know? So,
which is also a no-no. You don't need to do that.
I mean, it's really comes down to, you know, we're going to go into a whole nother podcast about like peak weeks and stuff.
Yeah, I think really, that we should save my peak week, run through my peak week for another podcast. Because that's a whole, That's a whole nother.
It's a whole other thing. But the short of it is just get in shape. You don't count on that.
You should be in shape ahead of time so you don't have to take these unnecessary risks to maybe it'll work, you know? Yeah. Probably won't work, but you know, in people's head they're like freaking out, like, I gotta do all I can to make sure I make up for the lost time because they weren't in shape in time. It's good to be in shape ahead of time.
Yeah, it's just it's unpredictable. So we'll go into that a whole other thing. But all right, let's go into what else we got in here.
Well, I guess for those competitors out there, this one's for you because I get DMs from girls all the time. Do you need boob implants to compete? No, you don't need boob implants to compete. That's a myth.
Yeah.
That is a myth. And I will tell you, there are several girls on the top 10 Olympia that don't have boob implants. Okay, I'm not going to call them out. It's rude. But they don't have it. You don't need it. You can literally use the padding in your bikini top. It's fine. I see people do that all the time. You should never get boob implants just for a reason of competing because you might regret it. And it's, you know, in the time you'd have to take off just to recover is also a big, it's a big deal too. It can go bad.
And that's something that even one of our head judges said. So Sandy, who's like one of the head judges of the NPC IFBB, she said she's never once scored someone down because they didn't have boobs. It was never a single time in her career where she's done that. So so that's, I think that's a good, like a relief for a lot of women to hear that.
Don't spend that $10,000 to get the boobs. Besides, boobs are kind of going out of style anyway. It's all about the booty.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
We're in the booty era for sure.
Yeah, we're in the booty era. So build that booty. Build it. Build it. Go to our YouTube channel. We got tons of glute videos so you can build your booty.
There
too.
You go. Plug on the YouTube.
Yes.
So what do you think? What is there something anything we're missing at this point?
I mean, we can just briefly say the last thing.
Yeah.
You know, I get messages all the time from girls and they're kind of scared to ask me anything. That's why they ask me and not like their coach. And I'm sure you get this a lot too. Do you need like special performance enhancing supplements in order to be one of the top?
Yeah.
No, you don't. No, you don't. And that is, it's kind of a pet peeve because I think people use that excuse because they can't get to that level. So they use that as like a crutch. Like, you know, well, the reason why I can't make it that far is because I don't take this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, if you saw me in real life, I'm small and all the other girls are smaller too. You don't need anything, like, for real.
Yeah,
like,
especially in the bikini.
Chill. People act as if I'm, like, freaking so buff and so striated. And I'm like, not really, though. Have you seen me in real life?
Yeah, I get not it really. A lot with you or any top pros. Or what is she on? I'm like, these girls have, they're so muscular already. Like, they've done it for 10 years. Like, Ashley's lifted weights for 10 years. So.
Oh, longer? Well, maybe not weights, but I've been an athlete my entire life.
Yeah, so
but
it's like,
weights, probably about,
And bikini division doesn't require a lot of muscle.
And you'll
muscle.
Get marked down, so that's kind of stupid.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Like, in that division especially, there's so, like, especially at the top level, a lot of these pros at the top level, they're already reached that maximum amount of muscle that they can have, so they can't take anything, even if they wanted to.
Exactly.
But then the lower level people will never believe it, so we don't even talk about it. It's like
a thing. Exactly, because it's kind of like no matter what you say, they're still not gonna.
Yeah, they don't believe. They're like, oh sure, Adam, I'm sure she's natural.
Yeah,
and I'm like, whatever, Adam, nothing to prove to you. You know, so it's like
there's myself included and several others. Like there are actually body parts we avoid because we don't want to get too muscular. So it doesn't make any sense to me. To do that. And again, I think really people don't want to believe it because they can't get to that level for whatever reason. Maybe they don't work hard enough. Maybe genetics or their work schedule. I don't know. But they'll always use that as an excuse as why they can't. So they'll kind of be like, you know.
Yeah. You gotta put in time. You gotta be willing to put in time. You know, if you never played sports your whole life and you're just starting this off and you've been lifting for 6 months and you don't look like one of the top Olympians, well, yeah, of course you don't. You haven't earned that yet. So give yourself the time. Don't just jump in and you know, I get a lot of women like after like 6 months, they'll be lifting weights for 6 months, get super into it, and then they're like, oh, I just need to take this and take this and take this to try to like shorten that window of getting to that next level, which, you know, if you want to do that, that's on you. But I'm not saying, you know, I really don't have any moral like pet peeve with people do it or don't do it. You know, that's never, that's always like gonna be,
I guess,
athlete,
same,
you know?
Here. I just hate with the blame game.
Yeah.
I think that's annoying to me. Like whenever you can't get to that level, that's your excuse. It's so funny because I've also gotten other kind of excuses like, oh, butt implant or even Somebody accused me of ab implants once. I'm like, you're kidding me?
Have you seen those things?
Yeah. That's, look, I mean, come on.
The ab implants that I've seen.
I've seen a few.
They're bad.
They're quite obvious.
They're not there yet.
They're not going to help you.
They're not at the level where they should be doing
those. Oh, my God. Even the glute implants, it doesn't even make sense because you would not see a tie-in.
Yeah. Yeah, you would.
If you got injections or implants, you're not, say bye-bye to your glute hamstring tie-in, real.
Done, yeah, for sure.
So people will say, oh, the top-level people have that and that, and they do this. It's not true.
Yeah.
Like, they are just kind of making excuses why they can't.
So do this, you know, in a way where it's healthy for you, where it's fun for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to take those things, you know, that's on you. Whatever, do your research and make sure you do it the right way. But the whole point of it is saying is that you don't need to, and most of the top level people that I know of have reached the level of having so much muscle where they couldn't do it even if they wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. Whether they did it before or not, who knows? But most of them just can't. You know, they're just in bikini. They'd be too muscular.
It'd be counterproductive.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just something we just want to, you know, we're not going to go dive into that stuff too much on this, but it's something to just know, hey, yeah, it is possible, but you got to give yourself the time and you got to work hard and you got to do things. Yeah, you got to work a little harder when you're not taking those things, you know? So so with that, I think that is it.
That is it for today. Stay tuned for our next one. And like I said, in a future podcast, I think it is cool if we would do like my peak week and what it looks like, because a lot of people are interested in that. So maybe the next one, stay tuned.
Maybe we can go over like the whole diet and like weeks and stuff like that.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, that would be really interesting.
So I guess that's our teaser for the next one.
Yes. Thank you guys for watching.
Thank you guys so much
for having
a great time. Watching and listening.
I'm sorry, I'm so YouTube trained.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
But thank you guys so much. We really appreciate it. Remember, follow her on Ashley K Fit. Follow her YouTube channel. She's always putting new stuff out.
On the gram. Yeah. Look at my butt selfies on the gram. Check my butt selfies out.
Yeah.
I just get. I don't do too many of those. You're gonna be disappointed.
And then, you know, always message us your suggestions. We really help. It's helpful. We need them because we're not creative enough to think of them on our own.
Oh, come on, yeah, we are. At the end of the day, we really want to know what you guys want to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. So DM us. You can do it on Instagram. I'm at Team Elite Physique. And I'm on YouTube too, just / Team Elite Physique. Message us, you know, and thanks so much again for watching. We really appreciate
it. Thank you guys.